Many Americans, especially common sense, Christian, Bible-believing Americans, assume that the powers that be have carried off one of the greatest conspiracies in all of human history.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, today is the 25th anniversary of the terror attacks of September 11th, and we're going to take a look today at what we know, what we don't know, what's changed for the better, for the worse, and whether or not there's compelling evidence that the attacks were either allowed or perpetrated by elements within the American government. In other words, Fred, was 9/11 an inside job?
Well, apparently, this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, better known as KSM, his trial is finally scheduled to begin, Doug, in June of 2028. This is 27 years after 9/11. You know, nothing says swift American justice quite like taking longer to schedule a trial than it took us to build the World Trade Center.
Wow.
You know, I guess at this rate, the conspiracy may be that the government is trying to make sure everybody involved dies of old age, you know, before somebody renders a verdict on this thing.
It's just unbelievable, Fred. I mean, what? Wow. That's 27 years. That's longer than it took us to lose the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah. So investigations were undertaken by the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency. Everybody knows them as FEMA, and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, also called NIST. So FEMA's report was published in 2002, followed by NIST's report in 2005. Now, some have seized on the facts that FEMA occasionally slaughters American citizens and that the NIST investigation was funded by the federal government. And since, you know, according to them, the government itself was involved, either by wiring the buildings with demolition explosives or managing the attackers or some even more sophisticated and diabolical things we'll hopefully have time to get to in the show later, Doug, or were at the very least aware that the attacks were coming. So there has, in fact, never been a trustworthy investigation, according to those who think 9/11 was an inside job.
Right, right. Well, let's just, you know, since everybody, Fred, tends to think about where they were the moment they heard. It's like my parents used to talk about, where were you when they shot Kennedy, you know? And for us, it's where were you on September 11th? As I recall, I got a call from my mom around 7:30 in the morning. And it was just after the second plane had hit. Because we have to remember, Fred, people weren't really aware it was an attack until that second plane. And then it was really obvious. And so my mom called me, and I remember we had just had a baby. Our oldest daughter was only a year old, and my wife and I, we'd been up late, and I remember wiping the sleep out of my eyes, and she told me, turn on the TV, we're under attack. And I turned it on and asked her what was going on, and I just kind of slowly started to understand what was happening. Well, how did you find out, Fred?
Well, you know, I was thinking back on that, and I was getting up out of bed. I think I was even laying in bed, and Sandy had this little TV on that we had in our bedroom at the time. It's no longer there, but, you know, I think Ryan was 4 years old, and I think we were getting ready to, or at least Sandy was going to take him to preschool. So he's in there, I think, watching cartoons, and then Sandy turned the channel, I think, because she heard about what was going on, and I just started watching that first building burn. And I do remember thinking, well, this has got to be a terrorist attack, but you don't know for sure, because their reports are like, well, it could have been a small plane. Even if it's a small plane, how does a small plane, you know, crash into a big building like that? It's, the odds are really low that somebody maybe passed out and just flew into it. So I'm thinking terrorist attack. And then you see that second one, I'm like, oh my goodness. Well, the other thing I remember about that day is going into work, and it was just so eerie because there's no planes except for occasional fighter jets screaming through the air.
Wow. Yeah, right. I forgot about that. That was really true. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was an interesting time for sure.
Well, I recall at some point, and I can't recall exactly when, but I was on the phone with Bob Enyar, and he was telling me that he was live on the air and 1360 up in Johnstown, where his show was at that time. And I was on the phone with him, and it seems to me at the moment, Fred, in my mind, that he did not have a television. I can't swear to that, but it seems to me that he was on the radio, and he was not watching television. And I was. I was watching television. And I was watching the live feed of the Towers on the Today Show with Katie Couric and Matt Lauer. And Bob was on the air with Don Wiedemann, as a matter of fact. And he called me at the top of an hour commercial break because it was right before the stroke of 8 a.m. Mountain Time when the first tower started to collapse. And I remember holding the phone and saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, Bob. And I don't say oh my God lightly, by the way. And I knew that Bob was always offended by people who use that phrase casually. But as I watched that happening, it makes you think about God, I'll tell you that, because it was shocking. And so I cried out for real. And Bob was, I remember him, like, what's happening? I said, the towers are collapsing. The tower is collapsing. The tower is collapsing. Anyway, and then Bob went on the air, and we'll probably get to some of that here in a little bit with some of what Bob said on the air that day while the events were happening.
Okay. So, I mean, did Bob already know about it, the crash?
Oh, yes.
The second plane? And then it's okay.
Oh, yes.
So he didn't find out from you. Okay.
No. And in fact, it's kind of coming back to me now, Fred, and I probably don't remember it all perfectly, but I remember he and Wiedemann had said before the top of the hour break, by the way, folks, if you're on the radio, the top of the hour break comes at 58:30, bottom of the hour, 28:30, top of the hour, 58:30, at least back then. And so there's about a minute and a half until what would have been 10 a.m. Eastern. 9:58, I believe, the first tower fell. So anyway, it was during that top of the hour break. And they were aware of what was going on, but it literally had just happened. And if I remember, Bob wanted to know, are you watching television? Can you see what's happening? Because Don Wiedemann's studio up at AM 1360 in Johnstown, Colorado, look it up on a map, it was rather Spartan. I don't think they had maybe a hot plate, but no TV. And so Bob asked me, were you watching television? And I was, and that's what I recall. And then I never went to work that day. You went to work, huh?
Yeah, actually went to work.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, okay, well, we're going to look at a few different questions today, Fred. First, did the government simply fail to prevent 9/11? Okay, second, did the government or the CIA or the FBI or Dick Cheney or the Israelis or USAID orchestrate, facilitate, or knowingly allow the attacks? And third, was the response at the time and since, was that good, bad? How do we assess that overall?
Yeah, and one thing we should be clear about as we go, there are really two very different propositions here. One is that the government had warnings, made serious mistakes, and failed to stop the attack. Now, there's plenty of evidence worth examining, Doug, on that question. The much, much bigger claim is that officials inside the government or some other nefarious group planned or deliberately allowed the attacks. So the point is, evidence of incompetence or prior warnings is not by itself evidence of that second larger conspiracy claim.
Yeah, I'm glad you're clear about that, Fred, because that is that's a serious charge. Serious charge.
Yep.
But as to the first part, incompetence, the fact that the president, who was responsible for protecting us, I remember he was caught unawares. He was in a public school burnishing his kinder, gentler political persona and pretending with the kids that he knew how to read, sitting there in front of a children's classroom in a government school. I mean, that proves to me the answer to the first question, evidence of incompetence.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no doubt, Doug, that the watchers on the wall, so to speak, you know, they were at least distracted, right? You know, and perhaps a case could be made that they were negligent. And not just Bush, but if you go back to Bill Clinton, I mean, remember he admitted that he could have killed bin Laden.
I remember
that story was around a lot. And this was back in 1998 that they had a chance to kill bin Laden because everybody knew then he was this really bad terrorist.
Yeah.
He was, you know, all over the news for quite a bit of time up to 9/11. So the second claim, the claim that 9/11 was deliberately engineered by people inside the American government, Doug, has that been established by credible evidence?
Well, so let's try to take a look as best we can, Fred. But right up front, something everyone should admit at the beginning of this discussion is that when you're talking about evidence in the 9/11 attacks, none of us actually have access to the firsthand evidence that was present at the time. And we all have to take other people's word for most of what we hear. I mean, except for what we saw and experienced on that day, which we just proved, Fred, was very little. Except for that, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I have more evidence than that that I can guarantee. I'm not going to claim that the evidence I cite is any more credible than any evidence anybody else cites. And so arguments about evidence we can't confirm, it just needs to all have that caveat. But, you know, we could start with what makes people suspicious, Fred, because I think that's a more interesting topic.
It really struck home to me when you said that we have to take people's word for a lot of what we hear. That reminds me of the whole JonBenet Ramsey case. And it's the one time that I can think of where I disagreed with Bob on something. I mean, there were other things I disagreed with Bob on that I was wrong about. He proved me wrong. But this was one that, you know, we talked about several times, and I just said, you know, I didn't buy your whole theory on the JonBenet Ramsey. I didn't think it was that compelling. And, you know, maybe we'll get to that later in the show, Doug, because it kind of plays into this whole thing about taking people's word for what we hear, because there's something said in that JonBenet Ramsey case that I think would have made everybody think it had to be, no pun intended, an inside job.
Hmm.
So I'm real sensitive to, you know, taking the word of other people, because I've been burned by that. We were all burned by that on the JonBenet Ramsey case. I'll make sure we bring that up later in the show. So I guess this is kind of a tease.
No, there you go.
So that we don't get too derailed.
That's right.
And I did want to bring something else up. So one of my favorite shows is the one we did with the Harvard scientist, Dr. Rob Stadler.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, he's got a PhD in medical engineering from Harvard, MIT, the Division of Health Sciences and Technology. And he developed 6 criteria for what he calls high confidence science. And I hope that we can apply that here. And it's useful because we're not asking people to blindly trust the government. I mean, none of us should do that. What we're asking, what I want to ask Doug, as a co-host of Real Science Radio, how strong is the evidence? And so his criteria for good evidence in real science, he says our confidence should be greater when the science is 1, repeatable, 2, directly measurable with accurate results, 3, prospective and interventional rather than retrospective and observational, 4, careful to avoid bias, 5, careful to avoid assumptions, and 6, sober in judging the results. And saying it another way, Doug, is not overstating the confidence or scope of what the evidence shows. Yeah. Try to be aware of that eerie music playing in the background of that video that's making a case for whatever point they're trying to push.
Yeah.
Because there's ways to draw you in.
Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, 9/11 presents limitations under, I think, every single one of those criteria. And I'm not talking about minor limitations. Major league limitations on every single one of those. You can't repeat 9/11. You can't rebuild the World Trade Center. You can't fly airplanes into it under controlled conditions and see what happens. Everyone who's investigated necessarily had to work backward from a historical event. So
exactly, Doug. And, you know, that doesn't mean that their conclusions are wrong necessarily. It means we should recognize the limitations of the evidence and be careful about how much certainty we attach to such a reconstruction as, you know, like they did with that investigation. And here's what we should all consider, and it's an important part, that the standard cuts both ways. For example, if the NIST computer models depend on assumptions, we should identify and examine those assumptions. But if somebody says that Building 7 was brought down with, for example, thermite, their theory doesn't get a free pass. I'd like to ask, for example, where's the directly measurable evidence? What assumptions are they making? And are they claiming more than their evidence demonstrates?
Yeah, yeah. And did you say thermite?
Thermite.
Thermite. Okay, so Fred, well, and we'll get to this. I mean, you're so far behind thinking, still thinking thermite. I mean, please. Anyway, but seriously, the I don't believe the government's explanation, that is an evidence for controlled demolition. You still have to provide evidence for a controlled demolition. And by the way, you don't have the ability to go scrape Building 7 for actual evidence. So anyway, just how difficult this argument can get if we don't admit up front that we're all making some pretty major league assumptions.
Yeah. And so for the rest of the show, though, I'd like to keep Dr. Stadler's six criteria in the back of our minds. And we don't have to decide whether we trust the government or distrust the government. Let's ask how much confidence the evidence itself deserves. I mean, where in, on the confidence scale from 0 to 100 do we go? So, Doug, before I ask your opinion of why do people suspect it's an inside job, you mentioned we can't, there's only so much material we have that we can scrape from this thing. And so that brings us to the interesting fact of the
week. What? I thought we were going to start talking about why people don't trust the government. Fred, we
will get to that.
We can't
really
delay that topic.
Really,
people are on the edge of their seat.
All right. I have a feeling they might be just on the edge of their seat for the interesting fact of the week.
Okay.
And see if,
well, this week I'm ready.
Okay. Here we go. Here is the interesting fact of the week. How many pieces of the World Trade Center structural steel did NIST actually analyze as part of its investigation? And I'll give you a multiple choice because I can't expect you just to ring out.
Well, can I just say, I think it's a surprisingly high number.
Okay.
That's my
gut.
Let's,
okay. So do you want a multiple choice or do you want to or just take a wild guess?
No. Give me the multiple choice. I'll take all the help I can get.
So A, 23, B, 76, C, 236. D, 1,106, and E, 5,222.
I go with the 5,000.
It was C, 236.
Okay, 200.
So NIST says this, its investigation also involved roughly 200 technical experts, more than 1,000 interviews, and review of about 7,000 video segments and 7,000 photographs. And, you know, I find that especially useful after considering Rob Stadler's criteria, because you can say, so they didn't have all the physical evidence, but they didn't have zero physical evidence either. So it gets back to your...
And Fred, this is why, this is evidence that I don't have an engineering degree. The engineers probably recognized that they could take elements of evidence from various parts, maybe that match video or pictures, and that they didn't need to analyze all 50 trillion pieces of the towers, which, I mean, how many pieces were there? It's unimaginable. But they didn't have to.
236 is what they had that they actually ended up analyzing.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to the fact that there was 200 technical experts involved in this, plus over 1,000 interviews and consultants. We're going to return to that later in the show.
Okay.
I think it's important. So, Doug, why do people suspect it was an inside job?
Well, Fred, it's because people don't trust the government, right? Have you noticed that? People don't trust the government, right? And
yeah, and that, because it gets back to the whole flat Earth thing, right? That's why a lot of Christians bought into the flat Earth. They just don't trust the government.
That's a great example, Fred. And we can actually start with, speaking of Earth, I mean, we can start with the Big Bang, evolution, and atheism, right? And then maybe we could get to the JFK assassination and the moonshot and COVID and the 2020 election results and Russiagate. I mean, but let's start with evolution, Fred. Many Americans, especially common sense, Christian, Bible-believing Americans, assume that the powers that be have carried off one of the greatest conspiracies in all of human history, that of converting a nation that was founded on biblical morals and a biblical understanding of history and behavior, converting it into an atheistic society that believes some of the biggest lies ever told, Fred. And they think, well, if they pulled that big lie off, what else could they be lying about? Kennedy? The moon? 9/11? I mean, everything. I mean, if they pulled off godless evolution in broad daylight in front of God and everybody, with people who had been to college, for crying out loud, we just can't put anything past these people. So maybe they're lying about everything big, Fred. Just like with Jackson Pollock and rap music.
Jackson Pollock, rap music.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's
Fred.
The connection there?
Uh-huh. Oh, so declassified CIA documents show that CIA had an outfit, the CIA had this outfit called the Congress for Cultural Freedom. This is a real thing, Fred. I'm not making this up. I'll link
this
to
the CIA. They had
the CIA had the Congress for Cultural Freedom. I'll link to the actual government documents. And they promoted modern art like Jackson Pollock starting in the 1950s. And now ostensibly, they were promoting it to counter the Soviet Union's cultural psychological operation around realism. And this was all during the Cold War, Fred, when people made vast amounts of money and livings and retirements creating psychological battles between the United States and the Soviet Union. So somehow some genius in the government thinks promoting abstract modern art like that of Jackson Pollock, and we'll link to some of that if you want to see what that looks like. And a lot of common sense Americans, again, Fred, they looked at this and they suspected that this whole operation, first of all, they were like, nobody could possibly actually like this art. This is garbage. The guy literally threw paint on a piece of canvas. You're telling me this is art? And so people were suspicious. Like, how does this happen? Well, it turns out Jackson Pollock probably never would have sold a painting for more than $50 at a yard sale if the CIA hadn't invested in a genuine operation to promote this horrible, what they called abstract art, and they claim they were doing it against the Soviets. But when you look at it, Fred, just as a Christian person with Christian sensibilities, you got to suspect that maybe this whole operation was actually counterintelligence by the Soviets. Maybe they took over the CIA's Congress for Cultural Freedom, and they were actually implementing their plot to degrade our sense of things that are lovely, things that are beautiful, things that are true. And so instead, we're kind of wondering, how is it that everyone in America who's culturally elite and smart and all the people I'm supposed to want to be like, how come they tell me I need to like this talentless, ugly, horrible, stupid art? It was just all very suspicious.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm starting to see how you would tie this to rap music. No. You know. Talentless, stupid, ugly art.
Okay. I thought maybe you were a big rap fan, Fred. I didn't want to offend.
Oh no, you trust me. Yeah, you're not offending me. I'm the typical of my generation that rap music is like it's not music.
Okay,
it's just saying words and there's something going on in the background.
Yes,
but you know, Doug. I mean, it's a really good point that, you know, we've done these homeschool conferences. And then just talking to some Christians, great people, but they have such a distrust of government and distaste that they just buy into some of these just impossible conspiracy theories like flat Earth
yeah.
and, you know, the faking the moon landing and all these things.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, and we'll talk a little bit more about why we want Christians to really think about what they're doing and how it relates to morality in the Bible when you're making claims like that, because you're making claims against other Christians.
That's right.
You know, that's one of the things with science. You know, all the major sciences were founded by Bible-believing Christians. And so that's accepted by, you know, all the scientists of the world accept things like gravity and just basic physics, all of those things that Christians discovered.
Right.
Is that a conspiracy? Or, you know, because
well,
Christians are actually at the forefront of that stuff. So just because the government has done some really bad things and there's been the pushing of this fairy tale of evolution and, like you said, the Big Bang, that doesn't mean that you just, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater on things that are actually true.
Right, right.
And what is real science.
Yes, and so it's like something that Bob pointed out on a show right toward the end of his life was a survey of medical doctors. These are doctors who actually do medicine and help sick people. And the majority of them believed in God and creation. They didn't believe in evolution.
Yeah.
And that was shocking to me because I've been told everybody believes in evolution except you, you nut job, wacko, you know, Christian tinfoil hat guy believes in a magic spaghetti monster in the sky who created everything. But a lot of that, Fred.
Yeah, and a lot of it was plain deception because they have this poll. And what was the Pew, I think, Pew Institute? The 98 point something scientists believe in evolution. Well, guess what? All they did was poll the National Academy of Sciences that produced Science Magazine. Well, those are evolutionists.
Uh-huh.
That's like going to San Francisco and taking a poll. Do you believe in gay marriage? Or do you think homosexuality is okay? You know, but you're only polling San Francisco.
Yeah.
And, you know, say you're polling downtown the back alleys of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be 98.6% support that.
That's right.
It was so deceptive.
And Fred,
that's like
deceptions like that, they didn't happen by happenstance, it turns out. That's called a conspiracy, Fred. When someone purposely alters, or I shouldn't say alters, when someone purposely misrepresents the data over and over and over. And in fact, Fred even calculates the collection of the data so that it'll be skewed and then presents it as real. That is a conspiracy. So there are conspiracies. It's like rap music, Fred. I mean, President Trump, he just defunded another actual intelligent asset last year, the U.S. Agency for International Development, popularly known as USAID. I'm sure you remember after Doge exposed all the profligate spending on vast foreign aid boondoggles and NGO media campaigns that were promoting grossly leftist propaganda. I remember hearing all about it, Fred, and thinking, I was wondering, did we actually win the Cold War or did we lose? Did the Russians pretend to lose because they had already taken over our government? Look what we've been funding over at USAID. And Fred, a lot of other common sense Christian people, I mean, they're wondering the same thing.
Yeah, and I remember USA, Doug, just like I think everybody listening, we heard it on the news and getting Elon Musk involved in all of that. It was oddly enough started by JFK, and it was started as another foil against Soviet political and cultural influence operations in 1961. So it was defunded after Doge revealed it was funding anything and everything you could think of that was an un-American and godless.
Yeah.
As I recall, it was one of Doge's few success stories and seemed to have pretty much disappeared after that.
Yeah, well, the Doge did, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember thinking at the height of the revelations that were coming out about USAID, I actually said to someone, I can't believe they haven't killed Elon Musk over this. I can't believe it. The fact
I'm sure
he's got some security. But anyway, yeah, it started by Kennedy, huh? Do you smell a conspiracy, Fred? Kennedy, did you say? Well, anyway, but listen, I looked into it too. In 1961, USAID had a budget of about $3 billion. That's 1961 dollars, which by the time Trump pulled the plug in 2024, it's actually about the same amount of money because of inflation. When Trump defunded USAID, they were managing, meaning handing out so-called foreign aid In 2024, they were handing out about $35 billion a year.
$35 billion. Yep. Wow. And it started at $3 billion. Now, of course, there's going to be the inflation of the dollar from 1961 to 2024.
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm hoping these Doge boys are still at work. Maybe they can look into what that inflation's all about. But
yeah, well, from $3 billion to $35 billion, I'm not good at math, Fred, but I think that's 1,000%.
Yep.
That seems like a lot.
Let's get back to the soul rap music connection, Doug. We got to tie up that loose
yes,
end.
Yes, oddly enough, right? So we've been talking about American and Soviet intelligence operations, which, again, by any reasonable measure, seem to have all gone the communist way. They seem to have won that one. But, Fred, since USAID was defunded, in September of 2025, starting in October 2025, no rap song or album has charted in the top 40 in America for the first time since 1990.
Wow.
Explain
that
one
to me.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, huh?
Yeah, yeah, and Lizzo, right? You're familiar with Lizzo. I know you're not a big fan, Fred, but you probably
have. Thank goodness I'm not.
You don't have all Lizzo's records?
I never heard of them until I saw your notes on them.
Well, Lizzo, Fred.
Is it a him or her? Or is it a him, her, they, the, it?
Well, she might not say anymore, but Lizzo, she is the ugly, talentless 21st century version of a Jackson Pollock painting, like one of the ones that even he thought was so bad he threw it away. That is Lizzo and her entire career, her entire impact on civilization. And Fred, just this past June, Lizzo released her fifth studio album. I can't say the title, Fred. And this is another
female
piece of
dog.
What's that?
A female dog.
Female dog. That's Fred, there was a time in America where if you titled your album with a word like that, not only could you not release the album, not only would the record label fire you, you'd be arrested for attempting to name a record like that and sell it to children. Anyway, but that's Lizzo's latest album was released back in June. It only sold about 2,700 copies during its first week of release, and that's when Lizzo's drug dealer and gang member friends and her mom and her other relatives all ran out of money, so they were only able to buy 20. Nobody's buying Lizzo. Nobody's buying rap music anymore. And so now this could all be happenstance, Fred, that just when USAID stopped spending money promoting degeneracy, rap music, it could just be happenstance, but it could be that a few billion here, a few billion there, and just like with the CIA back in the 50s and their Congress for Cultural Freedom, you know, buying and promoting modern artists like Jackson Pollock back in the 60s, it could be that the powers that be, meaning USAID, was force-feeding the kids this astroturf delusion that rap music, which, by the way, Fred, that more precisely, that's modern hip hop, that this was anything but ugly and un-American and ungodly, and that you wouldn't actually want this garbage.
Well, that could explain Kanye West's entire career, Doug. I mean, that one literally has always been a mystery to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love what you're doing here, Doug, because I thought it was brilliant. So you're showing what I think is a really good parallel. You're pointing to something we know actually happens. What was it? This culture freedom, the Congress for Cultural Freedom.
Oh, yeah.
And then USAID. So these are government-funded influence operations.
Yeah.
And they're showing why people might find a claim like 9/11 was an inside job as plausible.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that governments really conduct psyops doesn't provide evidence that 9/11 was one, right? But I just love the parallel. I mean, I didn't even think of this, that these were all psyops. It would explain why bad art and just rap became so popular. That never occurred to me.
That's right.
I think there really is a connection there. It's something to ponder, that's for sure.
Exactly, Fred. Whenever my mom told me, sweetie, don't believe anything they say, they're lying to you. And she was telling me that about evolution, about modern art.
The ominous they.
And all the leftists always say, oh, you guys always say they. Well, who's they, right? Well,
we now know who the they is in some cases.
That's right. It was USAID. That's who they is. All right. My mom was right the whole time. All right.
Yep. And you know, Doug, that phrase, the powers that be, I mean, that's right out of the Bible, right?
Really? Powers that be.
Yeah. Romans chapter 13.
Oh,
and there, remember where this guy named Paul,
yeah,
the Apostle Paul, says that the powers that be are ordained of God. Mm. So according to the Bible, the powers that be are a good thing, right?
Wow. Fred, just another phrase that...
I'm not sure if I, yeah, how that plays, but yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, the powers that be. Well, first of all, Fred, it comes from the Bible. Just another phrase, note, kids. Another phrase that everybody uses all the time, people on the left, people on the right, people who dress like boys, people who dress like girls, everybody uses it. It's from the Bible. The Bible permeates civilization at a level that if the left were willing to be reasonable, they would admit that this, there has to be something worth looking into with this book because it's everywhere. Anyway, but yeah, the powers that be are ordained by God to be a good thing. In fact, Fred, I think that verse goes on to say that they're a terror to execute wrath on the man who does evil, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be a good thing, but it's producing modern art and hip-hop music. It's obvious that the government's been plenty distracted with doing evil rather than terrorizing it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Intelligence operations, Fred. You said that. That's an accurate phrase. What you might call psychological operations, which I think you said, PSYOPs, right? PSYOPs. And all the operations of Soviet intelligence, along with the apparent success of those big lies, evolution, atheism, the Big Bang. Fred, it makes Americans distrustful of the government. And it makes common sense, Bible-believing people, reasonable people, receptive to tales of massive government conspiracies because, well, some relatively large conspiracies have had some success.
Yeah. It'll be interesting if we ever get the receipts on just how much USAID spent their money promoting evolution. I guarantee you that that happened without even looking yet. You can just guarantee, because we know who's the source behind all of this, the prince of the world.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, yeah. And Fred,
anyways,
you mentioned it in a recent show. I can't recall exactly when. Everybody should go back and watch all of them. But you mentioned that part of the rationale for force-feeding evolution into the government schools was around this fear of the Soviet Union that they were going to outrace us in the space race because they had thrown off the shackles of Christianity and were pursuing science and we needed to do the same. I remember that.
Yeah, and we've got a chapter on that at the end of the book, The List of Not So Old Things. So we encourage you, if you're watching the show, you can go to store.rsr.org. And in that book, The List of Not So Old Things, there's a closing chapter on kind of a lot of this PSYOPs stuff. And one of the things that's well-established fact, and nobody disagrees with it, is that the reason for pushing evolution into the textbooks, we can look back and find what caused that. And you know, Doug, it goes back to the space race, and we were afraid of the science, that we were falling behind science with the Russians. And science shows that evolution is true, so we got to teach our kids that. Yeah. And that all started around 1963, the same time that they took the Bible out of schools. I mean, it was kind of a double whammy, and we've seen what happens then. The book has charts on what's happened to society since 1963, and it's really revealing. Again, you can see more details on that if you go buy the book, The List of Not Sold Things, at store.rstar.org.
You should definitely get it. Yes, it could turn out that evolution ends up looking an awful lot like rap music. Once the funding dries up, hey, maybe it won't be charting like it used to, Fred, right? We can always hope. We can always hope. And yes. And then, Fred, there's a next thing. Getting back to why folks don't trust the government. Just sin in general, Fred. Everyone's a sinner, and so we all have in us, at least before we get saved, some sinful desire to get away with our sin. And so we all have a natural aversion to the God-given authority that the government has over us. And then there's another thing, Fred. The government, especially the military and the intelligence, by the nature of their operations, Fred, they're secretive and even deceptive about all kinds of things, like all the time. I suppose it's unavoidable that in a world full of enemies and all your enemies are liars and deceivers and they're lying and deceiving our government, especially where national security is concerned, they feel compelled to lie to us about stuff. So you combine that with the with one more thing, Fred, the well-known widespread corruption of greedy, ambitious politicians and the idea that we can't trust the government. When you put all this together, Fred, it's just not without some merit.
Doug, those are really plausible arguments for why people are suspicious of the government and why people ask things like, was 9/11 an inside job? I think it was really good that we went through this whole parallel analogy of what actually happens with the government and why, again, people distrust it. And in many cases, there's good arguments why you should. But now as we need to look at the 9/11, was it an inside job? I know people who are with us, they want to hear that. Well, you'll have to wait till next week.
Ah, yes.
We're out of time, Doug, for this segment, and we're going to jump into that next week. Was 9/11 an inside job? So we'll get right into the evidence.
Yeah, specifics. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
And, you know, hey, feel free to leave in the comments any questions you may have for next week, comments about where you were on 9/11, like the video, subscribe to the channel, all that good stuff. Yep. Dislike the video if you want to, but leave comments. And hopefully we'll get, you know, that helps people watch the channel more. And, you know, we get more listeners. And we do want to thank our audience for the telethon we did in August. That was mostly to the radio audience.
Yes.
But we met our goals. We actually exceeded them a little bit. It was fantastic. And so we again thank you for that. And please continue to support us at store.rsr.org.
Amen. Thank you very much for our audience members who contributed. Your contributions are of tremendous value. We couldn't do this without you. God bless you.
That's right. And we will be on the air again on radio, terrestrial radio, for another year.
Yeah.
So for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.